He and Dean were close, and yeah, it's been hard. But Dean wanted me to tell you he'll be back to work with the kids very soon.
No, he didn't,
Ellis says. I avoid his shrewd gaze.
He didn't send you here to talk to me, honey, and he didn't say he was coming back.
Ellis shrugs.
But you want him to.
My throat closes up. Yes, I want him to. I gulp again. I wanted to make sure you'll still have him if, when, the time comes.
Of course I will.
He nods toward the ice.
Question is, will they? Kids don't take well to being abandoned.
But they're also quicker to forgive, I point out. Although maybe not all of them. When I join Dakota on the bleachers a few minutes later, it's evident that forgiveness is the last thing on her mind. Dean doesn't like me anymore, she tells me in a flat voice. And I don't like him. I stifle a sigh. That's not true, sweetie. You both like each other just fine. We do not. If he likes me, then why isn't he teaching me skating anymore? And he doesn't help Robbie anymore, too. He hasn't been here in years. 3 weeks, but I guess to a 10-year-old that might feel like an eternity. Is he mad because I didn't want to wear the boy skates? Her bottom lip quivers. My mom said it was rude for me to make him buy me girl skates. Is that why he hates me? Because he paid money for girl skates? And then she starts to cry. Oh, God. I don't know what to do in this situation. I'm not related to her, and I'm not one of her teachers. Am I allowed to hug her? Will I get in trouble if I do? Fuck it. I don't care if it's inappropriate. Dakota is bawling in earnest now, and she needs comfort. I wrap one arm around her and hug her tightly. And then, as my heart throbs uncontrollably, I spend the next 20 minutes reassuring a sad little girl that my boyfriend doesn't hate her. My father's gruff voice plays on a loop in my head during the drive back to Dean's house.
I know men like him. They aren't equipped to handle the big stuff. The life-changing setbacks. The game changers. He'd fall apart like a cheap tent.
I'm terrified that my dad is right. But he can't be. Dean is just in pain. He's mourning the loss of a friend.
He lives a perfect life. He pays other people to clean up his messes.
A chill flies up my spine as something occurs to me. Fuck. Is that what I'm doing right now? Cleaning up Dean's mess by trying to ensure that his position at the middle school is secure? By begging a 10-year-old to forgive him for deserting her? God, I'm so tired. These past 3 weeks, I've been focused solely on Dean, trying to make him feel better, trying to get him through this. I'm slacking on my schoolwork. I show up to rehearsals bleary-eyed and exhausted because I spend all my time tending to my drunken boyfriend. Dress rehearsals start tomorrow, damn it. Opening night is in 5 days. I should be concentrating on the performance, but I can barely remember what this goddamn play is about. My frustration only intensifies when I walk through the door 15 minutes later and am greeted by a blast of deafening music. Nirvana's Drain You is blaring through the house. Wonderful. I find Dean on the living room couch, holding a beer bottle in one hand and air drumming with the other. He's shirtless, but not even the sight of his spectacular chest can soothe my jagged nerves. Dean! I shout over the music. He pays me no attention. I grab the remote from the coffee table and stop the music. Silence falls over the room, and his blonde head jerks over in surprise.
Hey, babe. I didn't see you there.
Hey. I sit on the edge of the couch and gently pry the bottle out of his hand. To my surprise, he doesn't protest. And I think he's more buzzed than drunk right now, because he doesn't slur his words when he says,
You got rehearsal tonight?
I shake my head. No, but dress rehearsals start tomorrow.
Shit, already?
Opening night is on Friday, I remind him.
Oh, right.
He acts as if he'd known that, but I'm pretty sure my play hasn't crossed his mind in weeks. He hasn't shown any interest in what I'm doing, in what anyone is doing. It's like he's frozen in place, stuck in that harrowing moment when he found out Beau was dead. Everyone else is continuing to live their lives, including Beau's family. Joanna is still performing on Broadway. We've been emailing since the memorial, and she told me both parents went back to work last week. Dean is the only one refusing to move forward. Baby. My throat squeezes, worry and fear forming a knot in my windpipe. You'll be there on opening night, right? His green eyes flare.
Why would you even ask me that?
Because you weren't there for Beau's memorial. I bite back the accusation and draw a deep breath. I'm just making sure, that's all.
Of course I'll be there.
For the first time in weeks, I glimpse genuine emotion in his eyes. Honest to God, warmth.
Where else would I be?
He's not here. Widow opens to a packed auditorium and closes to a standing ovation. The tears swimming in my eyes when Mallory and I take our bows have nothing to do with the overwhelming response we received from the audience. The spotlight makes it difficult to see a single face beyond the first three rows, but the second row is all I need to see, because that's where my friends are sitting. Well, standing, because they're on their feet, applauding along with everyone else. Hannah, Garrett, Megan, Stella, Justin, Grace, Logan. Hysterical laughter threatens to spill out as I scan the familiar faces and experience a Wizard of Oz moment.
And you were there, and you were there, and you were there. And you know who wasn't fucking there? The man I love. The man who promised he'd be here.
Backstage, I dutifully accept hugs and accolades from everyone who was involved in the production. Stephen, the student producers, our faculty advisor, the art students who created the sets, the lighting crew. The senior who played my dead husband lifts me off my feet and spins me around. Mallory hugs me tight enough to steal the breath from my lungs, then spends 5 minutes apologizing profusely for being such a flake at the beginning of the project. I barely hear a word she says. Tears stain my cheeks, but I think everyone assumes they're happy tears. Everyone assumes wrong. There's an after-party for the cast, crew, and friends at Steven's off-campus apartment tonight, and I assure my director that I'll be there. But I won't. At least not right away. I have somewhere else I need to be first, and when Hannah texts to find out if we're meeting outside the auditorium or in the parking lot, I'm already behind the wheel of Dean's BMW, my shaky foot pressing down on the gas pedal. When I pull up in front of the house, I'm startled by the amount of vehicles parked on the street. And there are 4 unfamiliar cars in the driveway, so I'm forced to park on the curb. I hear the music before I even reach the front door, which is unlocked. Anger floods my stomach, bubbling and simmering and reaching a boil when I enter the living room. It's full of monsters, man monsters, with a few petite women in the mix. Because of their sheer size, I determine that the guys lounging on the couch and armchairs and leaning against the wall must be football players. The girls, who knows? But I'm gratified to see they're draped over the football dudes and not my boyfriend. Dean is alone, sprawled in an armchair with his eyes closed. As if he senses my presence, his eyelids pop open and his face lights up when he spots me in the doorway. His happiness is short-lived, though. I'm still in the gingham house dress that my character wore tonight. I've still got my stage makeup on. My hair is still pulled back in a harried, messy bun. I'm not Allie right now. I'm Jeanette. And Dean's eyes widen in panic when he realizes what that signifies.
Allie.
His voice is drowned out by the music. I take one last look at the party going on in the living room, then spin on my heel and hurry toward the staircase. The tears well up again, and my throat is so tight I can scarcely breathe. This is why he couldn't be bothered to show up for opening night, because he was partying with a bunch of football players? I burst into his room and raced to the dresser, yanking open the top drawer where I've been keeping the clothes I brought over from the dorm. I usurped half of Dean's closet, too, and that's my next stop, pulling clothes off hangers and tossing them in my suitcase.
Oh, baby, don't do that.
Dean appears in the doorway. I ignore him and continue packing.
Allie, please.
He comes up behind me, and I swallow a sob when his strong arms encircle me. For one brief moment, I allow myself to sag against him, to lean into his warm, sturdy chest and feel his stubble scrape my skin as he rubs his cheek over mine.
I'm sorry, baby. I fucked up. I totally forgot your play was tonight.
I reminded you 10 times, I want to shout.
I promise I'll be there for tomorrow's performance.
His hands run up and down my waist, caress my stomach, skim my ass.
You said there's 3 shows, right?
My voice comes out terse. Yes, but don't bother coming tomorrow night. I don't want you there. He nuzzles my shoulder with his chin.
Don't say that. I know you're pissed, but I'll make it up to you. I will be there tomorrow.
I wanted you there tonight, Dean. I still can't bring myself to turn around and look at him, and I don't know why I'm letting him rub up against me like this. Come to think of it, why is he rubbing against me? I can feel his erection, harder than stone, digging into my ass. How is he turned on right now? The bizarre response of his body is what prompts me to spin around. Frowning, I carefully study his face, cataloging every detail. He's not drunk, I realize. His cheeks are flushed, but his eyes are too bright. Which means he's not stoned either, because his eyes usually get fuzzy after he's smoked weed. Right now, they're shining, sparkling with pleasure and happiness that he absolutely should not be feeling. Not when I'm standing here in tears. I inhale slowly. What are you on? He looks confused by the question. What are you on, Dean? I snap. What did you take? He blinks, then says,
Oh, just some Molly.
For fuck's sake! Without another word, I shove past him and zip up my suitcase.
Where are you going?
He sounds hurt. Bristol, I spit out. I'm not staying here anymore.
Why?
Why? You blew off my opening night to throw a party and do drugs. You're hopped up on MDMA, rubbing your dick all over me when I'm fucking crying. And you're seriously asking me why I'm leaving? His eyes cloud over.
I didn't throw a party. Ollie and Rodriguez called, asked if I wanted to chill, reminisce about Beau. So what, I'm supposed to say no to that?
My jaw drops. Don't you dare use Beau as an excuse for getting high! He flinches, but when he speaks again, his tone is defensive.
Big deal, babe. I took some Molly. It's not like I do it on a regular basis. Last time was more than a year ago.
That's not the point! I'm struggling to breathe again. There's no use in arguing with him right now. He can't hear me, not when he's on drugs. I exhale, and the air seeps out in a weak puff. My dad was right. I can't count on you at all.
Are you fucking kidding me? I've been there for you from the start,
he growls.
My best friend fucking died, Allie. So, gee, I'm sorry if I've been a tad distracted lately. I've had a lot on my mind.
His sarcasm isn't appreciated. Distracted? You haven't been distracted. You've been drunk, and now you're goddamn high. Resentment burns a path up my throat and pricks at my eyes. Guess what, Dean? People die. It wrecks me that Beau is gone. It fucking wrecks me. But you can't just drink all the pain away. His face turns red. I get it. The life of Dean is all sunshine and roses. It's my turn to dish out the sarcasm. But real life isn't like that. In real life, bad things happen and you need to deal with them. I pick up my suitcase and march to the door. I stop abruptly, spinning toward him again. I'm so mad and hurt I can't think straight. Life isn't perfect, Dean, and you need to grow the fuck up and accept that. I've been trying to help you, but you won't let me. I've spent almost a month watching you drink yourself stupid, watching you push everyone away, watching you disappoint everyone around you. He still doesn't say a word, and that makes me angrier. I went to Coach Ellis on your behalf, I shout. I convinced him to give you another shot for when you decide to come back to coach the team. The tears fall faster, soaking my cheeks. I sat with Dakota while she cried her eyes out. She thinks you hate her because she doesn't want to wear goddamn boy skates. I gasp for air. Well, I'm not holding your hand anymore or cleaning up your messes. I'm done, Dean. His breath sucks in. Finally, something I say gets his attention.
You're not done.
Yes, I am. My hand is quaking so wildly I almost drop the suitcase on my foot. Do you think you're the only one who's lost someone? I watched my mother die of cancer. I literally watched her wither away and die.
Allie.
You need to find a way to deal with your grief. But I can't be there anymore to help you. I'm not going to stand by and watch you stick your head in a bottle because you're too afraid to face the pain. I'm done. I storm out of the bedroom, leaving him staring after me in shock.
Chapter 32. Dean. I'm awakened by a loud, agonized groan. Christ, it sounds like someone is dying, and it takes a minute to comprehend that the tortured noise had come from me. I'm groaning because my head hurts. No, my eye hurts. Why does my eye hurt? I sit up and gingerly touch my face. My left eye is swollen shut, and my mouth is drier than the Sahara. Shit, I'm so goddamn thirsty. And weary. Just the act of lifting my hand to my face has drained me of energy. The Molly, I realize. Last time I took some, it also left me feeling drained and achy the next morning. I slide out of bed and discovered I fell asleep fully clothed. Staggering to the closet, I open the door and study the mirror behind it. Sweet Jesus. My eye is purple, bordering on black, and as I study my reflection, all the events of last night come crashing back. Missing Allie's play. Allie dumping me. Garrett coming home and yelling at me. What was he yelling about? I strain to remember. Right, about missing Allie's play. Oh, and because I'd invited half the football team over to the house and they... Yep, a few of the linebackers were snorting coke in the kitchen. Fuck. That's when Garrett pulled me aside and started railing into me. I must have said something he didn't like because, well, black eye. I turn away from the mirror and sink on the edge of the bed, conducting a mental tally of what I'm dealing with right now. I have a black eye. I have an angry roommate who gave me the black eye. I have an ex-girlfriend. And I made a little girl cry. I sat with Dakota while she cried her eyes out. She thinks you hate her because she didn't want to wear goddamn boy skates. Allie's angry words blare like a trumpet in my head, making my temples throb and my stomach churn. I barely make it to the bathroom in time, gagging on the bile in my throat before I even reach the toilet. I drape myself over the porcelain bowl and dry heave for what feels like hours. I didn't eat anything last night, so there's nothing to throw up. But my stomach keeps twisting and clenching and I can't stop heaving. When the nausea finally settles, I brush my teeth at the sink, then drop to the tiled floor and sit there for a while, thinking about what I've done, what I've lost. Allie, Bo. Goddamn, Bo. Why the fuck did he have to go and die? The thought is so absurd it triggers a wave of laughter, loud and uncontrollable until my eyes are watering and I'm hiccuping. There's a knock on the door. Dean, you in there? I cringe at the sound of Garrett's voice. He doesn't sound pissed, though, just tired. When I open the door, I find a pair of serious gray eyes peering back at me. You okay? Garrett says gruffly. I laugh again. Not in the slightest. Guilt passes through his expression. I'm sorry about the Shiner, he curses. But goddammit, man, you had it coming. You should see the mess those guys left. The house is trashed. I drag a weak hand over my scalp. I'll clean it. Don't worry about the Shiner, I deserved it. I'm surprised Allie didn't give me a matching one. Just saying her name is brutal. It feels like someone cut my chest open with a skate and is stabbing the blade into my heart, slicing it to ribbons. I can't imagine how she'll ever forgive me. I wasn't there for her opening night. Hell, I wasn't there for her even before that. For 3 weeks, I've been walking around in a fog, doing my damnedest to try to forget that Bo is dead. Whenever he crossed my thoughts, I'd crack open another beer or roll another joint because it was the fastest, easiest way to shut down my brain. Allie's dad had said he didn't trust me to take care of her. And he was right. I can't even take care of myself, apparently. Wilsey is pissed at you, Garrett says. I'm pissed at myself, I groan, still thinking about the sheer magnitude of my screw-up. My throat hurts. I miss Maxwell. Garrett murmurs, I know. It wrecks me to think I won't ever see him again. I know. There's a beat, and then Garrett surprises me by hauling me in for a hug. Not a macho side hug or quick chest bump, but a real hug, with both his arms around me, gripping me tight. I hug him back. I'm sorry, man. About the house, the drinking, just everything. I know, he says for the third time. A door creaks open. Is this a private, homoerotic moment, or can anyone join in? I laugh weakly as Logan lumbers toward us. Garrett releases me and Logan takes his place. His hug is briefer, but no less comforting. Logan slaps my back and says, You up for practice today? His gaze carefully studies my left eye. I don't have much of a choice, I answer with a sigh. I'll just go in and let Coach decide if he wants me on the ice. With this Shiner, he'll probably banish me to the weight room. I wish I didn't have to go, though. All I want to do this morning is drive to Bristol House and see Allie, throw myself at her feet and beg her to take me back. We'll tell him we were acting out a scene from Fight Club, Garrett jokes, before his expression goes serious again. He doesn't have to know what really went down. The party, the drugs. I nod gratefully. Thanks. And other than my eye, there's really no other sign that anything untoward happened last night. The good thing about my partying, not that anything in my life can be described as good right now, is that I possess the scary ability to bounce back like nothing happened. I drink like a fish, no hangover. I smoke weed, my head is clearer than the blue skies the next day. Today, I'm a bit slower to move, but that's because of the crushing weight pressing down on my heart. I pushed away the most important person in my life last night. It floors me how in 3 short months, that's what Allie Hayes has become. She's everything to me. Tucker has breakfast waiting for us downstairs. We eat, then book it to the arena where Garrett swipes his ID at the door and leads the way to the locker room. The four of us halt the second we enter the room. Coach Jensen and O'Shea are congregated in the corner of the room, chatting with a lanky, bespectacled man who's wearing a blazer and carrying a briefcase. A few of our teammates are loitering around, but nobody says a word. Hollis nods at us. Fitzy does a double take when he notices my Shiner.
Morning, Coach, Garrett calls out warily. What's going on?
Drug testing, is the terse reply. My heart drops. Splat. It just hits the floor. The nausea? Well, that rises, soars up to my throat and clamps it shut. My gaze shifts to O'Shea. He gazes back, utterly expressionless, but I get the sickening feeling that he's responsible for this. Random drug testing isn't a once-in-a-blue-moon occurrence. It happens all the time in college sports. But our season is almost over. Hell, our season is in the toilet with zero chance of going to playoffs. There's no reason to spring a spot drug test on us. My queasiness gets worse and worse as other players file into the room. I can feel O'Shea's dark eyes boring into me, but my gaze stays glued to my boots. I'm in a state of panic, living out my very own telltale heart, except instead of hearing a dead man's heartbeat under the floorboards, I'm excruciatingly aware of the blood in my veins, the steady flow of it, surging, pulsing, tainted with the molly I took last night. As my pulse drums in my ears, I draw in a shaky breath, exhale slowly, and make my way over to Coach Jensen. "Coach, can I speak to you in private?" I mutter. And just like that, he gets the look. The one that tells me he knows exactly what I'm going to say and that he'd rather slit his own wrists than hear me say it. "Sure," he says after a long, strained beat. He leads me to his office. We don't sit. I don't speak. He waits, but I can't bring myself to voice the confession. Christ, I'm so disgusted with myself right now. So fucking ashamed. Coach sighs. "You're gonna make me ask you, is that it? Fine, I'll ask." He pauses. "What's gonna happen when you piss in that cup, Dean?" The shame builds inside me until I can practically taste it when I gulp. "What are the results gonna show?" He pushes, his expression unbearably resigned. "Marijuana? Cocaine? MDMA? I mumble. He closes his eyes briefly, then he opens them. "All right, thanks for letting me know." I leave his office feeling like a man on death row. 2 days later, I get kicked off the team.
33. Allie. 3 days after I storm out of Dean's house insisting I'm done, I meet him at the coffee hut on campus. Every girl in the room turns to admire him when he walks through the door. I do too, because, God, he looks like the Dean I fell in love with. Green eyes dancing playfully as he orders a coffee at the counter. Blonde hair smoothed away from his chiseled face. Cargo pants clinging to his perfect ass. All I have to do is look at his face to know he hasn't been drinking today. Maybe not for a few days, actually. Hannah told me last night that Dean failed a drug test and was kicked off the team. I can't deny my heart broke when I heard that, because I know how important hockey is to him. But the news hadn't surprised me either. You can't drink excessively and take drugs without facing the consequences. At the rate he was going, the partying was bound to catch up to him. Surprisingly, he doesn't seem upset when I raise the subject, which is the first thing we tackle after he slides into the seat across from me. He simply shrugs.
"I had it coming."
With a pained expression, he adds,
"But I didn't come here to talk about the team. I wanted to apologize to you."
I nod. It's what I figured when I got his text invitation, but holy deja vu, because this is the second time in 3 months I've been in this position. Last time, it was me and Sean, sitting in this very coffee house, having this very same conversation. But this time, the ache in my heart is a million times worse, because I'm still in love with Dean. Hopelessly, desperately in love with him.
"I'm so sorry, baby. I fucked up."
His long, graceful fingers encircle his coffee cup.
"I didn't handle Beau's death too well. To be honest, I'm not sure I'm handling it now, but hey, at least I'm sober."
I nod again.
"I'm sorry I missed your play. And I'm so fucking sorry I put you in the position where you had to make excuses for me. With Coach Ellis and..."
His voice cracks.
"Dakota. I plan on apologizing to them too and begging their forgiveness. But I wanted to see you first.
I know he had. He's been calling and texting for 3 days, but I hadn't agreed to meet him until now. My emotions were too raw. Dean gulps his coffee. When he speaks again, his voice is thick with shame.
Can you find it in your heart to forgive me?
My heart? God, my heart is ravaged right now. It feels like it just weathered a hurricane. Hurricane Dean. I still can't erase Friday night from my mind. Standing on stage and looking into the crowd and not seeing Dean. Coming home to find him high as a kite. Can I forgive him, though? Fuck, of course I can. I don't hold grudges. Life's too short for that. Of course I can forgive you. I don't miss the spark of hope in his eyes, and it kills me to extinguish it. But this isn't about forgiveness.
What's it about, then?
You tell me. Did you ask me here to get back together? He nods slowly. His entire face softens.
I love you,
he says hoarsely.
I don't want to be apart from you.
Pain spirals inside me. I don't want to be apart from him either. But I think I need to be. I can't be with you, I whisper. He makes an anguished sound. At least, not right now. I grip my foam coffee cup in both hands, desperately needing the warmth it's radiating. I've never been alone, Dean. Ever. It's always been one relationship after the other with me. I'm not sure I even know how to be alone, and I think this might be a good time to figure it out. You said so yourself. You're still dealing with your loss. You still have other people you need to make amends with. So, while you're dealing with your stuff, I can deal with mine. His jaw tightens. I expect him to argue. I wait for him to argue. Because this is Dean Hayward De Laurentiis, the man who always gets what he wants. The man who pushes and pushes until he does. But he surprises me.
How long?
He asks gruffly. I bite my lip. I don't know. A few weeks? A month? I don't have a timeline. I just know I need to be on my own right now. No boyfriend. Just me. He looks sad.
Okay.
I can see the questions in his eyes. Is this just a break, or are we really over? Did I ruin this for us? Do you still love me? But he doesn't voice them. He nods and murmurs,
Take as much time as you need, baby.
Dean. I expected Allie to say one of two things. I'm done with you, Dean. Or, I forgive you, Dean. I expected a breakup or a tearful reunion, not this gut-wrenching state of limbo. It's fine, though. Just a minor setback, right? If she needs to be alone right now, then I'll leave her alone. But I was encouraged by the fact that she let me kiss her before we parted ways at the coffee hut. And when I tucked a strand of hair behind her ear, she leaned into my touch and rubbed her cheek against my fingers. She still loves me. I hold that comforting certainty close to my heart over the next few days. I need the reminder that someone still loves me as I go on an apology spree that leaves me drained. I'm armed with a Kill Bill list of people. Well, people to apologize to, not murder with samurai swords. I wrote the names down on an actual piece of paper because I couldn't keep track of all of them in my head. The first few names are easy to check off the list. Hannah is still pissed at me for hurting her best friend. But I win her forgiveness by spending an entire hour reciting everything I love about Allie and everything I'm going to do if... No, when, damn it. When she's ready to see me again. Hannah is mollified. Wellesley, check. Next, I apologize to my teammates for letting them down. Technically, I didn't get kicked off the team. I'm suspended until next season, but I'm graduating in the spring, so there is no next season. The guys are surprisingly cool with the screw-up that took me out of hockey commission.
Honestly, I think they've given up on the season. Garrett assures me the guys are still bringing it hard on the ice, but I think everyone is ready to wash their hands of this disastrous year and start fresh in the fall. Hunter especially. He's the one I apologize to the most, promising I'll make it up to him for bailing on our private sessions. The team. Check. But that's not my only team, and my heart is heavy as I drive to the arena in Hastings. Again, I'm taken by surprise because it takes very little effort to make amends with Coach Ellis. Before I can deliver the long speech I prepared, he claps me on the shoulder and says,
"Save it for the boys. Good to have you back."
Coach Ellis, check. The boys? Also easy to win over. This time I managed to get halfway through my prepared speech, which includes a promise to take them all out for pizza. When I try to keep going after that, Robbie interrupts me by shouting, "Dude, you had us at pizza!" The Hurricanes, check. I stay to help out with practice. My heart is no longer heavy.
It's soaring, because Allie was right.
I love this. Skating with the kids, giving them tips about how to position their bodies when they take their shot. After the final whistle blows, I help Ellis put away the equipment, and we spend 10 minutes discussing options I never even realized were available to me. My anxiety resurfaces when I climb the bleachers. Dakota has her pink notebook in her lap, pencil poised on a blank page. She tenses when I sit beside her. She doesn't say hello, and I clearly see the hurt flickering in her huge blue eyes.
"So, what did the evil Mrs. Klein assign for us today?"
I ask gruffly. She ignores me. "If you're supposed to write a paragraph about your hero, I'm sure I don't qualify. But if it's a description of the person you hate the most, I bet you can write 10 pages on me, easy." She giggles, then covers her mouth in horror as if she's trying to shove the high-pitched sound back inside. "Dakota," I sigh. She finally looks at me, fiercely. "I'm mad at you."
"I know you are, kid."
I swallow a lump of shame. I'm such an asshole. I bailed on our skating lessons, didn't come by to explain, I just disappeared from her life. Dakota and Robbie are being raised by a single mother. Dakota talks about her often, and she admitted that her dad walked out the door one day and never came back. It makes me sick to my stomach that I might have brought back those painful memories for her. My friend died. I stop abruptly because I can't think about Bo without feeling a shooting pain in my heart. Fuck, I miss that big oaf. I miss talking to him, just shooting the shit with him. Who else can I discuss Twilight with and not feel judged? "I didn't handle it very well," I tell Dakota. "I've never lost anyone before. Well, Gramps Kendrick, but he died when I was 5. Maybe I was more resilient as a kid." She's watching me warily. "I'm sorry, Cody. I'm really fudging sorry for disappearing without a word. I give you permission to punch me in the face as hard as you can, but quick, do it now when Coach Ellis isn't looking." She giggles again. Then, proving that kids really are more resilient, she reaches over and pats my arm. "Stop being such a girl, Dean. I like you again." I choke down a laugh.
"You do?"
"Uh-huh." She blows a bubble with her gum, then points to her notebook. "I have to write one page about my favorite movie and why I like it."
"Gotcha. What's your favorite movie?"
"The Princess Diaries."
"Of course it is."
"Okay, then." I crack my knuckles as if I'm preparing to throw down. "Let's do this thing." "Dakota, check." I call Joanna Maxwell when I get home, luckily catching her on her dinner break at the theater. I apologize for not coming to the memorial. She forgives me. We talk about Bo for almost an hour before she reluctantly says she has to rehearse. We promise to keep in touch, and there's a dull ache in my heart as I hang up. I'm not breaking that promise, though. Bo was important to me. Joanna is his big sister. I'm keeping in fucking touch. Joanna, check. I have one more phone call to make, and I'm not looking forward to it. A few days ago, I asked Fitzy to track down Miranda O'Shea for me. Fitz illegally gets his hands on video games all the time without buying them, so I figured he might have the skills to track down a phone number. Turns out I was right. I have no idea how he did it, and I don't plan on asking because I'd rather not go to jail. I dial the number, then wait. I haven't seen or spoken to Miranda in years. I don't have feelings for her anymore, but oh boy, there's definitely unresolved shit between us. And there was one thing I never got to say to her. I hope to change that today. If she picks up the damn phone. It rings and rings, and I'm about to disconnect when a harried voice comes over the line. Hello? I take a breath. Miranda?
Yes, who's this?
It's, Dean. I pause. Dean De Laurentiis. Shocked silence fills the line. I know I'm calling you out of the blue.
How did you get my number?
She interrupts, but her voice is soft, not angry.
My dad?
No, a friend of mine tracked it down. There's an awkward pause on both our ends. I won't keep you long, I tell her. I just had something to say to you, something I never got to say back then because your dad pulled you out of school. I exhale in a rush. I'm sorry. She exhales too, sharply. I'm sorry for everything that went down between us, I continue. For the part I played in your, breakdown, she finishes wryly.
It wasn't your fault, Dean. I was dealing with depression long before we went out.
I know, but we had sex, and afterward, Jesus, this is uncomfortable. And this whole conversation feels clinical, like we're strangers discussing someone else's sex life instead of our own.
We had sex because I seduced you when you were drunk.
She sounds deeply ashamed.
And then I tried to guilt you into staying together when I knew you weren't happy with me. You have no idea how guilty I felt about it afterward. I wanted to call you, but I was too embarrassed. And my dad told me he'd ship me to Siberia if I ever spoke to you again. So I said nothing. I figured you'd forget about me eventually.
There's a pause.
Obviously you didn't.
No, I didn't. Another pause. Anyway, I clear my throat. That's all I wanted to say. I'm sorry if I did or said anything to contribute to what you were going through, or to exacerbate it. I never meant to hurt you.
I never meant to hurt you either.
I gulp. So, you doing okay now? Graduating from Duke this spring, huh?
Yes.
Excitement echoes over the line.
And I got into med school.
The news startles me because she always talked about wanting to be a social worker, not a doctor. I guess people change, though. God knows I have. We spend a few brief minutes catching up, and I'm relieved when the call ends. Miranda was an important chapter in my life, but it feels good to close it. Miranda O'Shea. Check. I didn't bother adding Miranda's father to my list. No amount of apologizing will make that bastard like me, and truth be told, I don't owe him any more apologies. The only crime I'm guilty of is breaking up with his daughter. I didn't deserve to be punched in the face and treated like dirt for it. Frank can work through his issues on his own. I'm working through mine. Another week passes. Allie is still doing Allie. I'm still doing me. We've texted a few times. Just brief how you doings and not much else. I'm dying to see her. Hold her. Kiss her. Make love to her. But I promise to be patient, so I keep my distance. I do, however, poke Hannah for information every chance I get. I know that Allie aced her screenwriting course. I know she got her nails done at the salon in town. Bright green, Wellesley had revealed. And it made me smile. The next time I pester her for an update, Hannah reveals that Allie flew to LA. My heart immediately drops because I think she left for good. But Hannah is quick to reassure me. Turns out the people at Fox wanted Allie to come in and read for them in person. They'd loved her audition tape, but wanted to test her chemistry with the two actresses she'd be working with. My heart damn near explodes with pride when I hear that, and I send her a congratulatory text. I don't hear back from her until several hours later.
She says she's about to board the flight home, and that we'll talk soon. I board my own flight on Saturday morning out of Logan Airport. I'm making a quick trip to New York because there's one final item I need to cross off my list.
34. Allie.
You can't turn down the part! Hannah looks outraged that I could even suggest such a blasphemous course of action.
Why not?
Because it's a lead role on a sitcom. What if the show's a huge hit? You could win an Emmy.
I shrug and sip my coffee. I know I'm talking crazy right now. Believe me, Ira dished out his own dose of disbelief earlier, begging me to accept the job. But when it comes to my career, I always go with my gut. And my gut is telling me this is not the role for me. I haven't made my final decision yet, I tell Hannah. They gave me until Wednesday. It's Saturday night. That means 4 whole days to think it over. My gut insists there's nothing to think about. I'm tempted to call Dean and ask for his advice, but I force myself not to. I'm so used to running my decisions by my boyfriend. I did it with Fletch, Sean, Dean, but nobody else can make this decision for me. It's all on me. Honestly, I've enjoyed being on my own these past couple weeks. It's nice to just think about myself for once. But I miss Dean. I really, really do. I know he's doing well because I've been harassing Hannah for status reports. She said he's working with the Hurricanes again. He's gone out to Malone's with the guys a few times, but only had a few beers as far as Hannah knows. There aren't any pictures of him on Instagram or Facebook making out with other girls, but a part of me still worries about it. Dean is the most sexual guy I've ever met. I'm praying he's jerking off a lot, because I don't know what I'll do if I find out he slept with someone else. I didn't bring up the subject at the coffee house because I just assumed he'd keep his pants zipped while I took this time to clear my head. That was selfish of me, maybe. But I love him, and if I hear that some chick tried to put her hands on him, I'll beat her senseless. He's mine. And I'm finally ready to claim him. The time apart succeeded in centering me, but now it's time to get my man back. The only problem? Dean is in New York visiting his parents for the night. Hannah mentioned it earlier, which triggered a flash of concern because it's weird that he would fly to Manhattan for only one night. My ringing phone interrupts our coffee chat, and I'm even more concerned when I see it's my dad's number. A second later, his voice rumbles over the line.
I don't want you to worry,
is how he starts. And oh my God, who says that? Now I'm worried. I slam my mug on the kitchenette table and stumble to my feet. Hannah eyes me in alarm. What's wrong? I demand. What happened? Are you okay?
I just told you not to worry, didn't I?
God, sometimes I really want to kill my father.
I took a little spill this afternoon, that's all. Thought I might have broken my arm, so I called an ambulance.
Fear pummels into me. Oh my gosh, are you all right?
I'm fine,
he says firmly.
It's just a sprained wrist, no broken bones, I promise.
A sarcastic note creeps in.
I can ask the hospital to send you copies of my x-rays if you'd like.
I clench my teeth. Don't be a jerk, Daddy. He sighs heavily in my ear.
I'm sorry. I just knew you'd overreact when I told you. I promise you, sweetheart, I'm fine. My wrist is a little sore, but I have my pain meds.
How did you get home from the hospital?
Taxi. And now I'm lying on the couch watching the Hawkeyes game.
I inhale a slow, calming breath. Okay, don't walk around. Don't try to lift anything heavy. Please, Dad, just take it easy for a couple days.
I will. Love you, AJ.
Love you, too. I hang up and turn to Hannah, who instantly asks, Is your dad okay? I nod. So he says. But Dad was a hockey player. Hockey players always say they're okay, even when they're bleeding from their ears and spitting their broken teeth at your feet. I take another deep breath. Then I pull up Dean's number and press send.
Dean. Joe Hayes answers the door with the biggest, meanest scowl I've ever seen on another human male.
You've got to be kidding me. She sent you over to check on me?
I gently touch his shoulder to move him out of the way. God knows he won't be inviting me in.
Yep, I confirm. Then I walk inside and look around. Fortunately, nothing seems amiss.
I glance at the stairs. Allie told me over the phone that Joe had taken a spill. There's no blood on the hardwood, no broken floorboards, that's good. And he's not sporting any bruises or visible injuries. He's using the cane, but he looks steadier on his feet than the last time I saw him.
Please don't tell me you got on a plane and flew all the way here just to give me the once over, he mutters. No, I was already in the city visiting my folks and brother.
Mr. Hayes settles on the sofa and proceeds to ignore me. I take off my jacket and drape it over the back of the armchair. Then I sit down. He balks.
What are you doing?
Getting comfortable. I raise a brow. Did I mention I'm spending the night?
Like hell you are.
His outrage makes me chuckle. Come on, sir. I thought we already established that arguing with your daughter is pointless. She asked me to stay the night and keep an eye on you, so that's what I'm doing. Because I will do anything that woman asks. I'd sell my soul to the devil himself if Allie told me to do it.
I don't like this,
Mr. Hayes grumbles.
I don't care,
I say cheerfully. And that's how I wind up watching college football with Joe Hayes for the next hour. It's almost 9 o'clock now and my stomach is grumbling. I hadn't eaten dinner, and Mr. Hayes doesn't object when I order a pizza. Sausage and bacon okay? I ask him as I place the order. He grunts. I guess that means yes. Another hour passes. We don't talk. We scarf down pizza, drink beer, and switch from football to hockey. The Bruins are playing tonight. Every time we shout at the screen or cheer for a goal, we glance at each other warily afterward, as if remembering who we're with. Between the second and third period, I put down my beer and say,
I love your daughter, sir.
And he says,
I know you do, pretty boy.
I don't know if that's acceptance or if it's a, yeah, you love her, but I still hate you. I decide to treat it as the former. Around 11, I help him up the stairs and wait outside his bedroom door, listening to him wander around and change for bed. Then I knock. You all right in there? I call out.
I'm fucking fine. Go to bed.
Chuckling to myself, I duck into Allie's childhood room, where Joe said I could crash in tonight. First thing I notice, the scent. Holy shit, it's the scent. The mysterious fragrance that's always surrounding Allie and that I can never place. I wander over to her dresser and pick up a small vial of perfume, or at least I think it's perfume. The label is pale blue and reads, Allie, in a pretty script font. What the fuck?
Ava had it made for her.
I jump in surprise, turning to find Mr. Hayes standing in the doorway wearing nothing but plaid boxers. I can't help but gape at his chest. Dude's in his late 40s and suffering from MS, and he's rocking a six-pack. I'm impressed. I guess that explains how he landed Allie's smoking hot model mom. Shit. And it suddenly occurs to me that if this is how Allie's dad looks now, she's got expectations. I'm going to have to look forward to working out for the rest of my life. At my blank look, he gestures to the perfume bottle in my hand.
My wife, AJ's mom. She had a friend in France, this fruity-tooty fashion designer she worked with once. He knew a perfumer. Is that what you call them, perfumers?
I have no idea, sir.
Anyway, Ava's friend gave her perfume one year. A scent made especially for Ava. AJ was green with envy, so for her 12th birthday, Ava told her she was getting a special perfume for her, too. My wife was sick at that point. Real sick. So she was doing everything she could to make AJ happy.
She asked AJ what scent she wanted, and AJ says, he snorts in amusement, strawberries and roses. I laugh too, because now it makes total sense why I could never figure it out. Roses and strawberries, two completely different fragrances, yet somehow, when combined, they work. They're Allie. She got 6 vials made. I think AJ might be down to 3, I'm not sure. She's very stingy with that shit. Doesn't want it to run out, I guess. So Allie has a French perfume that was created just for her? That's kind of badass. He shrugs. Ava spent a lot of time in France. Spoke French fluently, too. She always wanted AJ to learn it, but AJ wasn't interested. My heart squeezes. She's interested in it now. He looks surprised. Yeah? I nod. She's trying to teach it to herself by watching a French soap opera. Mr. Hayes grins. I've watched 2 seasons with her. I sigh ruefully. It ain't half bad. That gets me a full-blown laugh. It comes from deep in his throat, lighting up his blue eyes. You ain't half bad either, pretty boy, he says, and then he walks out of the room.
Allie. I'm waiting for Dean in his room when he walks in on Sunday night. I would have picked him up from the airport, but he left his car in the short-term parking, so he drove back from Boston himself. His green eyes soften when he sees me.
Hi.
Hi. I hastily stand up, but neither of us makes a move toward each other. We're standing 5 feet apart. The distance is unbearable. With a strangled noise, I throw myself in his arms, and he catches me easily, his big hands settling around my waist and pulling me close. I bury my face against his chest and whisper, "Thank you for checking on him."
"You're welcome."
I feel his fingers thread through my hair. He tips my head back, forcing me to look at him.
"He's fine, babe. I promise. I think he just called the ambulance as a precaution. His wrist is a little sore, but that's it. He's totally, completely fine."
I'd already heard all this over the phone from both him and my father, but the reassurance and certainty in Dean's eyes is what I needed to see. I hug him tighter as relief pours through me. His lips brush my temple. Then he inhales deeply, as if he's smelling my hair.
"I missed you,"
he murmurs. "I missed you too." Swallowing, I ease out of the hug and meet his gaze. "I don't need any more alone time." A slow smile curves his lips.
"Thank fuck."
He flops on the edge of the bed and tugs me into his lap.
"I've been going crazy without you these past few weeks."
"I know, but the time apart was good for me. I needed to take a look at my life and to take a look at myself. Just me, and not the me that's always in a relationship. I needed to know I could be alone."
"And can you?"
"Yes." I scrape my fingers over the dark blonde stubble on his movie star jaw. "But I don't want to be alone. I want to be with you." He kisses me, soft and sweet, no tongue, just his lips brushing mine, over and over again until I'm whimpering for more. Just when I part my lips to invite his tongue, he pulls away.
"Wellesley said you're thinking of turning down the Fox pilot."
There's a chiding note in his voice. "Ugh, why is everyone giving me shit about this?" I sigh. "I haven't made my decision yet."
"But you're planning on turning it down."
I hesitate, then nod. It's his turn to sigh.
"I know why you're doing it, babe, and I'm sorry, but I can't let you."
I blink and I'm off his lap, my butt hitting the mattress. Dean walks over to where he dropped his coat. He reaches inside one of the pockets and his hand emerges with an envelope. Oh no, stupid aliens are deja vuing my brain again. He slaps the envelope in my hand and says,
"Open it."
I open it without a word, and yep, I find the same fucking thing that Sean tried to give me. confirmation numbers for 2 flights to Los Angeles. For crying out loud, do all guys share one brain or something? Like a collective consciousness that causes them to make the same boneheaded moves? You're not coming to LA with me, I inform Dean. He looks startled. I'm not turning down the part because I don't want to be away from you.
The ticket isn't for me.
Turning it down because... I stop. Wait, what?
It's not for me, he explains. It's for your dad. I know you don't want to be away from him, so I figured instead of you giving up your dream to stay on the East Coast with him, you keep the dream and he comes to the West Coast with you.
Dean shrugs.
I already ran it by him and he's on board. He said he'll start looking for a place to rent once you give him the word.
I'm shocked. I can't help but remember the day at the coffee house with Sean, when he insisted on coming with me. And now here's Dean, insisting on me going without him. My dad was wrong. And right. He was right and wrong. Dean fell apart, yes. But maybe he needed to fall apart in order to learn that life isn't perfect, that bad things do happen and you can't stop living when they do. Smiling, I hand the envelope back to him. I'm turning down the project. He looks annoyed.
Alley cat.
Not because of my dad, I cut in. Although I'm glad to know he's willing to relocate if I do end up working in LA. I'm turning it down because the project isn't right for me. I don't connect with the role, and the contract requires me to commit to 7 seasons if the show takes off. I'm not signing away 7 years of my life to play a part I can't stand.
Oh, well, fuck. I guess I should have asked you before I bought those non-refundable tickets, huh?
You think? Chuckling, he yanks me back in his lap, and I wrap my legs around his hips and my arms around his neck. I try to kiss him, but he speaks before my lips can connect with his.
I made some decisions, too.
I raise my eyebrows. Oh, really? Like that? When his cheeks turn pink, I pounce immediately. Holy shit, are you blushing? Okay, now I'm really curious. What's going on?
I'm gonna be a gym teacher.
My jaw falls open. Seriously? He looks embarrassed.
I spoke to Coach Ellis about my options. Turns out private schools play it fast and loose with the requirements you need to teach there. I don't need a degree in education, but it helps. And when I was in New York, I hopped on the phone with the admissions officers at NYU and Columbia. Both told me the same thing. I can upgrade my degree. It's just an extra year of classes. Kinesiology, health and wellness, that kind of stuff. But I'd be able to teach at the same time, depending on the school that hires me.
He shifts awkwardly.
I did something crappy.
Uh-oh, what did you do?
I used the De Laurentiis name with those admissions officers.
I fight a laugh. Oh, sweetie, that's okay. It's for the greater good, right? Because Dean working with kids is good, damn it. He could really make a difference. He could help those kids build confidence, become better athletes, better people.
And then I spoke to the new hockey coach at my prep school and asked him to let me know if there are any openings in the private school sector, either for a PE teacher or a coach.
He sounds excited now.
There's an opening for both at a school in Manhattan, grades 1 to 8. The job would start in the fall. Phys ed classes for all grades and coaching the girls' hockey team.
Girls? I grin. That should be fun.
I think I might interview for it.
Damn right you will. If this is what you want to do with your life, then it's what you need to do. I pause as something occurs to me. Wait, does that mean you're not going to law school? Did you tell your parents?
Yes and yes. That's why I went to New York this weekend. I sat down with my dad and we talked for hours. Did the same thing with Nick later, before you called me to check on your dad. They were both really supportive.
I'm not surprised. Dean's family is awesome. I'm proud of you, I announce.
I'm proud of me too.
He nuzzles my cheek before planting kisses along my jaw. Then he sucks on my neck and pleasure ignites between my legs. Oh, sweet Moses. It's been way too long since we had sex. Almost a month. Or maybe more than a month? God, I can't remember. The feel of his warm, wet lips traveling along my throat is turning me on beyond belief. Dean, I murmur.
Hmm?
I love you.
I love you too.
He licks the shell of my ear. But I don't want you right now. His head jerks up, his expression beyond insulted.
Can you repeat that, please?
I don't want you, I flash an impish grin. I want little Dean. My boyfriend throws his head back and laughs. Then he unzips his pants and gives me exactly what I want.
Chapter 35. Dean. April. Graduation is looming. I'm kind of indifferent to it if I'm being honest, but whatever. I'll wear the cap and gown and throw my diploma up in the air because I know it'll make my parents happy. Me? I'm just happy in general because I'm in love with the greatest girl in the world, and the greatest girl in the world is in love with me. And even though the team didn't make it to the playoffs, that doesn't mean there isn't any news on the hockey front. My man Logan was signed by the Providence Bruins, the farm team for the Boston Bruins, which means in a year or two, he might actually get called up to play for the pros. As for Garrett, his agent is working hard behind the scenes. Apparently, several teams have shown interest in G, and I'm crossing my fingers that he ends up somewhere good. I already know where I'm ending up. Manhattan. Last week, I interviewed for the teaching position at Park Lane Academy. Yesterday morning, the headmaster called to tell me I got the job. It's a 2-year contract, the second year conditional upon whether I upgrade my degree. And I guess my sister is onto something about her universe theory, because an hour after my call with Park Lane Academy, Allie's agent phoned with news that made her shriek so loud that Garrett heard her all the way from his shower and flew into my room buck naked, armed with a hockey stick. Once we assured him everything was okay, and commented on how pretty his dick looked, Allie revealed she'd been offered a role on a cable show being developed by hotshot director Brett Kavanaugh, who she did a play with last summer. No audition necessary. Kavanaugh liked working with her so much that he offered her the role outright. The best part? The show is being filmed in New York City. Allie says she still wants to do theater too, when the show is on hiatus or if it bombs, which I don't think it will. But the most important thing to her is that she wasn't cast as the ditzy airhead. This new role is serious and meaty, as she likes to say. And I know she's looking forward to the challenge. What if I have to show my boobs? Her wry voice jolts me from my thoughts. We're walking hand in hand on the path leading away from the drama building, where her monologue class just let out. There's still a chill in the air, but everything is starting to look green again. And the snow has melted away, leaving a layer of slush on the cobblestone path.
Did Ira say that?
No, but this is HBO. Chances are, they'll ask me to do nudity, at least a topless scene.
Would you be okay with that?
I ask carefully. She shrugs. As long as it's not gratuitous, then sure, I'd consider it. There's a pause. Would you be okay with it? I cast her a devilish grin.
Babe, your tits are fan-fucking-tastic. I'd never deprive the world of them.
Be serious. Would you mind?
I consider it, then shake my head. I'm cool with it. It's part of your job, and if you're comfortable flashing some skin, then so am I.
She leans in and smacks her lips against my cheek. You're awesome. You know that?
Of course I do. I hear it at least 10 times a day.
Her answering laugh is cut short when a familiar figure steps into view. My shoulders go rigid as Allie's ex-boyfriend slowly approaches us. Sean stares at our joined hands. I don't need to look at Allie's face to know what she's feeling right now,
I can tell by the way her fingers tighten around mine that she's not happy to see him, that she hasn't forgotten all the callous shit he said to her after Thanksgiving.
Hey, Allie.
Sean looks miserable, but I don't have an ounce of sympathy for him.
I thought about calling you.
Don't, I say brusquely. You need to forget her number. Allie gives me a reassuring squeeze. We already said everything we needed to say, she tells her ex. Her tone is soft, but firm. Sean clears his throat.
I owe you an apology.
Yep, and you've just made it, and I accept, but we're not friends, and we won't be. She moves forward. I'm reluctant to do the same. I'm aching to punch that bastard in the face, but Allie is pulling me away from him, her fingers laced tightly through mine. He's not important, she murmurs to me. She's right. He isn't. We've barely taken 5 steps before I spot another familiar face. This one belongs to a hot blonde who smiles and waves as she passes us. Looking good, De Laurentiis. I don't return the compliment because I like having balls, and Allie will rip them off if I flirt with Michelle. Besides, I don't want to flirt. Allie's killed that desire. She's the only one I want to flirt with. Plus, I like having my balls attached to my body. So I just say, nice to see you, and continue along. I guess this is the day of the exes, huh? Allie says dryly. I roll my eyes. Michelle's not an ex. Right, she's just someone you had a threesome with. Almost had a threesome with. You cock-blocked me, remember? Yep. She looks pleased with herself, and I pretend to pout. Ha! Don't act like I ruined your one chance for a threesome. I'm sure that wasn't your first rodeo. I offer a little shrug. Fucking hell, how many threesomes have you had? This time I wink. A few. You? Tons. I stiffen. Names and dates, I growl. I need to make a new Kill Bill list. Allie bursts out laughing. Relax, you were there for all of them. A frown touches my lips. I think I'd remember being in a threesome with you, me, and Winston, she says happily. I groan in exasperation. That doesn't count. Sure it does. DP was involved. Hell yeah, it was. An hour later, we're back at my place. It's Allie's turn to pick a movie, which means I have time to take a shower because it always takes her a ridiculously long time to decide what she wants to watch. I wander into the living room 10 minutes later to find her snuggled under an afghan, fiddling on her phone. Her mouth falls open when she sees me. Oh my God, Dean, why are you naked? I don't like shirts. What about pants? She squawks. Got something against those two? I cross the room and drop my naked ass on the couch, then grab the edge of the blanket and throw it over my lower body. Allie watches me in amusement. What? I say defensively. I've never met anyone who's so anti-clothes. It's so weird. I take her hand and bring it under the blanket, placing it directly on my semi-hard dick. Weird or awesome? She rubs her thumb around the head of my cock, then sighs. Awesome, she amends. So what did you pick? I gesture to the TV screen, all the while enjoying the slow, lazy strokes beneath the blanket. Oh, you'll like this one. Her hand stills as she turns to beam at me. It won an Oscar. A groan slips out. No, baby doll, no, I refuse to watch another one of your Oscar winners. She clicks the remote with her free hand, and my eyes widen in delight. The Exorcist? I blurt out. The fucking Exorcist? The hand job I'm getting doesn't even register anymore. I'm too pumped that she chose a horror movie, and little Dean is paying the price for my non-sexual-based happiness. See what a good girlfriend I am? I'm all about compromises, she grins. This relationship rocks. Damn right it does. I kiss her cheek, then suck in a breath when something occurs to me. What is it? She says in concern. I turn to her with even wider eyes. Babe, are we boring? Allie hoots. Did you really just ask that?
Yes, I fucking asked that. I wave a hand around the room. Look at us. It's Friday night, and we're on the living room couch talking about how great our relationship is. That's the most boring thing we can be doing. I sigh loudly. Is this our life now? Doomed to stay in and cuddle every night? Is the excitement over?
The excitement isn't over, she assures me.
Are you sure? Because it kind of feels like... Hey!
Tucker's voice cuts me off, and we both look up to see him standing in the doorway.
Hey, I wrinkle my brow. I thought you were hanging out with Hollis tonight. Plans changed.
He enters the room, taking in the sight of us under the blanket.
G and Logan around?
I shake my head. At the dorms.
Shit.
He drops his hand to his side. His strained expression is alarming. So is the way he keeps shifting his feet, like he can't find the right position he wants to be in. Everything okay? Allie asks lightly. Tucker hesitates.
Fuck. I was hoping the others would be home so I could tell everyone at once.
Tell us what? My uneasiness grows.
He stops, closes his mouth, opens his mouth, stops again. Then he lets out a breath that sounds like it sucked right out of his soul. I'm having a baby.
Silence crashes over the room. From the corner of my eye, I see the wide O of Allie's mouth. Her shock is as palpable as mine. Like an idiot, I stare at Tucker's abdomen for a good 10 seconds before remembering that we don't live in a world where Arnold Schwarzenegger can carry a child.
You're having a baby?
My mind continues to spin like a carousel, making it hard to speak without stuttering.
With who?
Tucker meets my confused eyes and says, Sabrina James. And beside me, Allie starts to laugh. I swivel my head toward her, but her laughter keeps sputtering out, low and wheezy, until finally she catches her breath and gives me a wry look.
The excitement is over, huh?
Well, fuck me.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Score. Written by L. Kennedy. Performed by Savannah Peachwood and Andrew Aiden. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 L. Kennedy. Production copyright 2016 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.